war crimes in Syria and Iraq. Amnesty's report documents, quote, widespread use of excessive force against dissenters and demonstrators, in addition to extrajudicial executions and forced disappearances across the globe.
A video showing a protest against refugees in Germany has sparked outrage after it went viral on the internet. In the video, a mob of anti-migrant demonstrators prevents a bus carrying migrants in the eastern state of Saxony from reaching a refugee shelter. The crowd of around 100 protesters can be heard shouting slogans like, "We are the people" and "Go home." A second video showed a police officer dragging a terrified young migrant boy off the bus. Saxony police say they were investigating the incidents.
Shocked German officials on Sunday condemned two disgusting incidents involving anti-migrant mobs in the eastern half of the country. In the town of Bautzen in Saxony State, a crowd cheered as fire destroyed the roof of a planned refugee shelter. Officers had to clear some of the people aside because they were obstructing the firefighters as they tried to put out the blaze. No casualties were reported. Police are suspecting arson as the cause. The incident came just days after some 100 angry protesters.
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
The American National Super PAC makes this call to support Donald Trump. I am William Johnson, a farmer and white nationalist. The white race is dying out in America and Europe because we are afraid to be called racist. This is our mindset. It's okay that our government destroys our children's future, but don't call me racist. I'm afraid to be called racist. It's okay to give away our country through immigration, but don't call me racist. It's okay that few schools anymore have beautiful white children as a majority, but don't call me racist. Gradual genocide against the white race is okay, but don't call me racist. I'm afraid to be called racist. Donald Trump is not a racist, but Donald Trump is not afraid. Don't vote for a Cuban. Vote for Donald Trump. 213-718-3908. This call is not authorized by Donald Trump.
Angry Indian Radio.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land!
Indian land!
Indian land! Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet Radio for the smart of the region.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Not just gangs of kids anymore. They are often the kinds of kids that are called super predators. No conscience, no empathy. We can talk about why they ended up that way, but first we have to bring them to heal. And
most creative people in art, music, entertainment, Columbus, people that go out, find nations, things like this, most of them were white. Now I don't wake up every morning and I have a fetish with it and say, well, I'm proud to be white just because of this. It's just a fact.
I was going to ask you, I haven't known you very long. I mean, I've known you about 2 minutes, but I mean, where did you get the idea that you were a member of a superior race?
Well, I think I had a lot of my opinions were set directly down from my father, of course, and I listened to him very intently. I read quite a few books that he recommended. And then I had the opportunity to go to public school, high school, to be converted into believing the myth that all races are equal. There's no distinction between people. Everybody should get together and live in this la-la land and kind of utopia.
See, in your paper, the outfit of
War.
Paper that War puts out, my eye was caught today by a cartoon. It has a picture of Dr. Martin Luther King giving a speech saying, I have a dream.
Yes.
Then it has a picture of a white man with a smoking rifle pointed through a motel window saying, well, I've got a dream too, Buster, and it just came true. Now, you talk, when you're on television, not like that. Is that for public relations purposes?
Well, our paper, which anybody can receive, I'd be happy to send it to them, P.O. Box 1784 in Fallbrook.
Yeah, I know.
California, 92028. Well, if you're for free speech, you shouldn't mind giving the address.
Why not?
Okay. And they can get the most satirical, racist, aggressive, radical, white separatist, whatever term you want to put on it, comics, thoughts, ideas. And we don't pull punches. And we have our columns. Some are a little more looser than others. Mm. And these cartoons, I didn't write them, but I'm proud.
I get the impression we're getting nearer to the point now, because in the list of political prisoners, white Aryan political prisoners that you have, is the name James L. Ray, who I seem to remember is the man who was at any rate convicted of killing Dr. King. I don't know whether you know anything about him that we don't know, or whether you just claim him because he did that. But when we come back, because we're coming to a break, I want to ask you, what is the role of violence in your organization?
Okay.
And whether you consider the U.S. government legitimate, and whether you're shaking your head already, and whether, in other words, you believe in politics.
Internet radio for smarter than
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, Salaton and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. You have tuned in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under colonial, imperial, theological, racialist, homophobic, misogynist, neoclassist, neoliberal, neoliteral, neo-fascist, and pro-capitalist anti-environmental oppression. I'm your host, Angry Indian, editor-in-chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, logging to the Fourth World from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and our main news portal, ang-newswire.blogspot.com, and along with my executive co-producer and master studio engineer Ms. Guadalupe Morales, we welcome you back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the official broadcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service. There's you know, we haven't been here in a minute, primarily because we haven't had any money. But you know, it is what it is. We're here now, so you know, let's move forward. Well, the reason why we're pointing out, you know, we haven't been here in a while is we're under certain budget constraints. So is the timeshare that we're dealing with. So we just weren't, you know, we weren't able to get in here. And we do apologize for that. And I want to point that out, only to point out that we do not ask for any sort of funding here. We run this as on the, you know, open source, on the freeware. And so when everything else is done, including the computer system in here, right, Loop, all of them have been converted to Linux now. So everything has been running on open source. And that's the model here. But things do cost. We're not asking you for anything to show you that it's possible. That is possible as indigenous people, as independent activists, as independent journalists that are dealing with fourth world issues, indigenous issues, justice issues, you know, real things that involve real people, right? Not just your pet peeve. You dig what I'm saying? You know, if you really have something to say, which the majority of you, of course, have something to say, but you're waiting for somebody else to do it. You have to be your own media. But, of course, you know, we would hope that you would fact check. We would hope that you would, you know, be reasonable about your reportage. We hope you would try to, you know, learn the basics of journalism. That, you know, when you hear me criticize a witchcraft story coming out of Africa, you know, because there's no, the journalist isn't questioning anything about the story. You know, they're just reporting it as is. They were told that there was a witch and that somebody died because of witchcraft, and then they reported it as is. You know, which says something about the journalism, which also says something about the society, right? And, you know, when we look at South America, how much of the news in terms of reportage, you know, for politics is factual? You know, we you know, here in the United States, in the UK, in Australia, well, throughout the entire Anglophone world, right? New Zealand, Canada, Occupy Canada. You know, it's the same fucking thing. You know, ownership determines content. You know, and I really don't understand why that is so complicated for a lot of people to understand. It really doesn't make any sense to me. Ownership determines content. So if a motherfucker owns a newspaper like Rupert Murdoch, right, who owns the Wall Street Journal now, besides all of the other crapola he runs with Fox and News Corporation, after they bugged the phones of victims, they bugged the phones of the royal fucking family and got away with it. MI5 let them get away with that shit. MI6 let them fucking get away with that. The Cameron government let them get away with that. Bugging the phones of the fucking royal family. Now, I don't give a fuck about the royals. It's just the idea that their security could be that goddamn compromised. And, you know, he still has his business. But then again, the church goes ahead and does what the fuck they've been doing for how many goddamn centuries. And they still operate as a business. They're still functioning. So, you know, what the fuck does that mean, right? Yeah, I had some things I wanted to talk about here when I come down, but that's something I wanted to get out of the way a little bit because it was on my mind. Now, you know, I really don't want to fucking talk about Trump. You know, Ms. Angry Indian hit me to this, and Lupe thought I was kind of daft for not being aware of this. I didn't know that Donald Trump was talking crapola about pig's blood dipped in, you know, dipped bullets. When he was in South Carolina, told some nonsense about General John Pershing. Now, you know, Black Jack Pershing, right? That's how I remember him. Remember being taught in school about him. And the American Expeditionary Force, right, during World War One, and the damage that was done by him overseas. But, you know, what are they saying? That when he was up against the Moros, that they had done this? No, there was all kinds of torture and what have you. There was all kinds of goddamn genocide and all that bullshit. And there was a lot of fucking, you know, abuse. I mean, Howling Jake Smith. What was it I told you, Luke? The kill and burn. The more you kill and burn, the more it will please me with the American Expeditionary Forces that were in the Philippines. They were killing, you know, Filipinos on site. They would go into a village and wipe out all of the males. They had a stick thing of red paint. I can't remember any longer how high this thing was supposed to be, but basically any of the males, you know, I'm talking about the children now, any of the males that were any taller than the mark on this stick, they would execute. So you had entire villages that had no males. And I'm talking about even elders that were too, you know, I mean, way too old to pick up a bolo, you know, to do anything, to be a threat to anybody. They couldn't even slaughter, a boar, right? So, no. What happened in the Philippines during the Philippine-American War, which no one even goddamn discusses, is atrocious. And this is why Trump could get away with you making up a fucking story like that. And none of his goddamn stupid ass, which he admits, are uneducated goddamn people, and that he loves them because of it. He loves the fact that they're uneducated. He points out the fact that they're uneducated. This is why he can get away with making Bible verses, making them up on his own. He's quoting things that do not exist in any version of the fucking Christian Bible that you care to goddamn name. He mentions historical fucking incidents that didn't goddamn happen. This isn't the only one. He's a fucking liar. There's another story out that he claims that he lost tons of friends when the Twin Towers in New York City went down. That's a goddamn lie. He probably did know a few. I would say he probably knew several. Why wouldn't he? He's a moneymaker. They sell money there, or they sold money there, right? Currency exchange, right? International currency exchange, right? So he probably knew a few, but he's talking about the hundreds of thousands. But even with that, he won't name one person. One victim that can be fact-checked against the list of actual fucking victims from 911. Because, that's another scam that's gone on. And they've got, I know of several anyway, who raised money saying that they lost someone in the World Trade Center or in building number 7. Because, the scandal about that wasn't on fire, but it went down anyway. And they had these particular records. I mean, there might be some truth to that. Fuck Alice Jones and what have you. There's a lot about 911 that just doesn't make any fucking sense. And I'm not a truther, per se. I certainly don't want to be identified goddamn as one. Because we certainly used to play the audio here because I still have a lot of questions. Bush said he saw the first plane. How the fuck did he have seen that? It wasn't, I saw the second one and I could even tell you where the fuck I was when I saw it and who I was with. And who I was on the phone with, who called to tell me to turn on the fucking telly to look at it. He's a fucking liar. Donald Trump is a fucking liar. And it's really ridiculous to me because he's getting away with this shit. He's getting away with this. And, the media's not fact-checking him. His own party's whining about him. But they're not fucking, fact-checking him. They're worried about the fact that they know they will never be able to control that son of a bitch. That was the same thing with John McCain. It was the same thing with John McCain and the Sarah Palin ticket. You had two completely fucking loose cannons. And American Capital said, no. We're not going to have two goddamn wild people in here because it was the same thing with McCain. He would make historical claims that didn't, match up to anything because, and I'm not trying to diss him or anything. I'm just saying it just seemed that when he got excited, he would get his historical errors mixed up. And he did this quite often. And then they had that stupid song that he sang about Iran, right? That little humming thing that he told. And that was stupid. That could have caused an international goddamn incident. And then you have Sarah Palin. Now, we can talk about the fact that he was staring at Sarah Palin's ass while the two of them were on stage. And we can talk about the fact that there's photographs of a lot of motherfuckers when they're standing next to Sarah Palin on the Republican camp. For some reason, they can't, they can't contain themselves. They can't contain themselves. Remember that photo, Luke? He had a fucking erection. He's standing right next to her with a stupid grin on his goddamn face. There's two men like that. There's two photographs like that about Sarah Palin. That's what the attraction is. Look at Fox News if you think I'm fucking around and I'm being misogynist about this shit when I argue about misogyny all the goddamn time. Look at Fox News. They have very attractive
blonde women, you know, in other words, the type of shit that will attract the motherfuckers to watch them. Because I know every black guy loop that talks to me about Fox News, which I have to say this, it's goddamn embarrassing, but it's the fucking truth. Okay? Every black home I fucking go into regularly watches Fox News on a regular fucking basis. Even, you know, they say they vote Democratic, whatever the fuck, you know, because the majority of them are talking about Clinton. They don't know anything about Sanders. The cats that listen to rap, I believe only, you know, dealing with Sanders and shit because they like Killer Mike. Because they wouldn't have heard about Sanders any other way. And these folks, they're watching Fox News. Now, how can I support what the fuck I just said as a, you know, anecdote? I can support that because if you go to the Nielsen ratings, you know, you go to the website, they actually put out PDFs on their findings on what the fuck people are looking at. And they break it down by ethnicity. Now, it's been a while since I've looked at it, and I believe I still have some old PDFs somewhere. But the bottom line of what I'm trying to get to is they look at Asian households, and frankly, I don't know exactly how they collate the data, but I do know that your Samsung Smart TV is listening to you. How do I know that? And how I know it's not a conspiracy theory? Because the Samsung fucking company has told their customers, do not have personal conversations next to your fucking telly because, you know, there's a third party that is going to, you know, collect all this shit. And then what happens with that? It turns out I believe that the company is Chinese. Is that the case, Luke? Because I got the story from your husband. No, that's Android phones. Oh, that's something. That's right. Thank you. That's something else. Android phones. There's some third party that is collating your data in China. It's a private company. So, you know, you have no goddamn privacy. You have no fucking privacy. And I just went on a complete fucking tangent, and I'm going to be straight up with you. All of this seems, you know, like it doesn't make any sense, but it does make sense. If you got black folks that are watching Fox News on a regular goddamn basis, but, you know, they're regularly voting Democrat because they kind of don't know what else to do. And they kind of know that the Republican Party is racist. But like I said, they're watching Fox News. And you got more black people watching Fox News now. And like I told Lupe and a bunch of other black folks who didn't want to fucking believe me, that Empire was done. Because, you know, Lee Daniels is not the most radical motherfucking Negro out there, all right? He isn't. And I'm not saying that because he's gay. And you know, my wife actually said that he hasn't come out officially, right? Well, I don't give a fuck if he has or not. You know, we watched the entire 2 seasons of fucking Noah's Ark. He left everybody goddamn hanging with the fucking first season. And, you know, it was a decent show. Yeah, it was bougie, but, you know, it's a decent fucking show. Comes back with season 2 with worse goddamn fashion, a worse motherfucking storyline, and same thing. This ends up leaving you motherfucking hanging. You know, it was directionless. It didn't know where the fuck it was going. And you know, there was just the, you know, everybody's got a nice home, and, there was a hood, you know, love angle, and triangle, really, in the motherfucking first season. And it was kind of funny and all that. But, you know, I'm still going to say this, and whether motherfuckers like it or not, if you look at Queer as Folk in terms of gay programming, at least I could say that every character in that motherfucker, even the black cat that was married to the white fellow that had the child and was doing the whole Stepford Fag thing, as the Brian character put it, I knew people like that. There was more reality in that goddamn show than there was in Noah's Ark. But look, you know, first steps. You know, first steps. You know, I mean, they could have gone to Marlon Riggs, right? And his long-term debate with Essex Henful. Because, you know, Marlon Riggs was pretty open about it. He said when he went to the Castro, when he went to the gay community in San Francisco coming out of the South, he didn't look at black men, you know, he didn't look, and most black men did not look at each other. I've had conversations with cats about this. You know, Essex Henful, on the other hand, was coming from just the other thing. I believe he had family in the South as well, but he was in, I want to say Harlem, New York City. And which is the black Mecca, right? Or was until Atlanta, right? You know, and you read his poetry, which is how I first found out about both of these gentlemen. Because Marlon Riggs was a filmmaker, but Essex was a poet. And both these gentlemen have, these brothers have passed on. But, and if you want to really look at the black experience in terms of the gay thing, I mean, there's a few things I suppose I could point to in terms of documentaries, but Black Is and Black Ain't is one. And, there's another. I can't remember. But anyway, look up Marlon Riggs and you'll see his work. Oh, Brother to Brother. Brother to Brother. That's it. Yeah, you know, and don't be scared of the subject because, you know, it's black homosexuality that they're talking about, man. You know, chill the fuck out. You know, because I remember just, you know, and I just bumped into this cat. I didn't really bump into him. I mean, we had breakfast together. And I reminded him on the total freak out he did when the biography came out on Malcolm X from Manning Marable. You know, the one that shook everybody the fuck up. I mean, there was a lot of errors in the book in general. You know, I mean, it's just a lot of errors in the book. You know, I don't know why he spent a lot of time working on it, but you can kind of tell from the bit that I've read it because I don't own it. I've read parts of it. And it just got to the point where I wasn't getting anything out of it. But I can't say that I've read the whole book. You know, I can't. But from what I've looked at, you know, it seems that he was trying he was really breaking his back to try to make this black, activist, this black, intellectual, which is how I look at him, would have, a black head of state, really, if you really want to push things. Because, you know, Marcus Garvey might have gotten the numbers, right? And he might have had the vision. But when I say this, I'm not dissing Marcus Garvey, but he really didn't have the statesman thing down pat. He didn't. He had a broad vision. But, you know, he needed help with the nitty gritty and he really didn't want to accept help. Okay? And that's something we need to politically be aware of. When we, you know, break this, you know, this history down, deconstructing this is not disrespecting the honorable, you know, Marcus Garvey. There's nothing to disrespect. But, you know, we have to point out that the man was not Jesus. You know, we talk about Black Moses, but if I remember correctly, you know, for those of you who are into the theology, Moses was not allowed to enter the Holy Land, right? Because he fucked up, right? Am I getting that right? So, you know, the brother has certain failings, like we all have goddamn failings, which is why we have to really be able to check ourselves. And if you can show me another goddamn, I'm saying this even, you know, Dr. King, I respect Dr. King, and I apologize. I've talked about it on the show. I wrote a paper against Dr. King one time, not against him, but, you know, really, really critical, because, you know, kumbaya politics. So, you know, I didn't understand what the fuck was really going on with King in the shadows, his connections to Malcolm X, and just saying that doesn't mean any goddamn thing. He was extremely goddamn radical. But see, but the way that I got the information through the public school system, right, like every goddamn buddy else, through the, you know, and I shouldn't say kumbaya so loosely like that being Geechee, but, you know, you dig what I'm saying. You dig what I'm saying. You know, fucking all of the bullshit that we've been told, you know, I went along with that. So, you know, they always wanted, you know, when somebody gets angry with you, or really, they don't like what the fuck you're saying, you know, in terms of when you're talking about racism, they try to shut you down with, well, Dr. King wouldn't have thought like that, you know, he loved white people, you know, why can't we all get together and all that kind of shit. So, you know, as a black activist, you don't want to hear that. So, you know, I was critiquing that, but as I found more information, and what really made me start looking deeper was the fact that there's a letter that's touted by a lot of Zionists on how he loved Israel so much. Well, yeah, he was supportive, just like Jean-Paul Sartre was supportive. You understand what I'm saying? But he was still critical. You know, to say, and it turns out that that letter was a fraud. You know, that turned out to be a complete hoax that has been going on for the longest. But, you know, there's still a lot of people that hang on to it because they want to. Even if, you know, you prove to them. They don't want to accept it. Just like there's still black people. West Indians that I know right now. You can't tell them that the Protocols of the Elders of Zion is bullshit. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it. The Hotep types that we clown here on this show, they don't want to hear that shit. They, you know, they use counterfacts and all kinds of bullshit rationalizations to explain on why Jews really control everything. So if that's the case, Sanders should just win this motherfucker outright. Right? He's the only Jew running for president. Nobody's ever gotten this goddamn far. And I'm saying for president. Not talking about when Gore and Holy Joe Lieberman allowed themselves to be knocked out of the goddamn way. And yes, they allowed themselves to be knocked out of the way because they didn't push for a motherfucking recount. So I don't even want to goddamn hear it. And yes, I'm going to say it again. Michael Moore brought it up on his Fahrenheit 911, that not one motherfucking politician from either goddamn party, including Senator Gore, would stand up and support the Congressional Black Caucus to investigate the motherfucking vote count on what, you know, we call now, you know, voting while black in goddamn Florida and a couple of other fucking states, because I believe it also happened in Alabama and Ohio the second time around, you know, after they admitted that it happened, but it won't happen again, and it happened the next time in three goddamn states. And, you know, just about every election since then, they've been doing everything possible to keep niggas and sphinx and, you know, certain Asians from voting. And why am I saying certain Asians? Yeah, let me clarify that chart for a moment before I proceed. Why am I saying certain Asians? If you look at some of these Trump rallies, you'll see this exact same fucking dynamic at the National Rifle Association rallies, at these major gun shows, at the gun swaps, meets, whatever the fuck they call it, right? And at the survivalist gatherings, you will see Asian women. You will see Asian women at these events. Yeah, and I'm going to say it like this too, with their hopper children toddling behind them while their, you know, beer-bellied husband. Yeah, and it's either one or the other. Either the cat is in the CrossFit or he's a total beer-bellied looking, you know, slob. You know, which I should talk about that too. You know, the sloppiness of the United States and why Trump is winning. Because when you look at him, he's a fucking slob. He's a mope. And the majority of people that support him are mopes. You have to be a fucking mope to support somebody who says, I love the uneducated. Trump said he could go in the middle of the street and do a mass shooting and he wouldn't lose one voter. And you still support him. So why am I saying some Asians? Well, you know, again, these are the things that the left doesn't like to talk about. And the conservatives who bully everyone with the idea of political correctness. Remember, political correctness was not a term that was created by the progressive wing, by the left wing, whatever the fuck you want to put it. You know, it was an idea out of common sense that was called political correctness, and it really shouldn't have been. And the Republicans really pressed that, like, you know, Frank Luntz, going from global warming to climate change, you know, because it puts doubt. You know, words matter. And motherfucking, you know, this bollocks about, well, you know, you can't say hopper, whatever, it's offensive. Well, it is. But see, again, the same people who have, you know, argued with me about using hopper in context, right? Like, say, between Latino, Hispanic, and Pocho, right? Native Americans and apples, right? Africans and Uncle Toms, you dig what I'm saying? You know, the whole hopper bit. You know, and of course, amongst, you know, AMA Asians, you know, there's an argument. You know, for my age group, AMA Asian was considered the progressive thing. Now, young people are telling me that, you know, my friends' kids are telling me that they find that offensive. But yet they use queer, which for people in my age group, we find that offensive. I've known people that have gotten their jaw broken because they were queers. Right? And I know how this argument got goddamn started. Yeah, I know we're going on another tangent, but roll with me. That argument got started because a lot of young white activists on the East Coast were going to black political meetings. This is how they got their bones. I know because I was there. I saw them. And they were taking notes. You understand what I'm saying? And, you know, they were here, motherfuckers talking about, yeah, because Eazy-E was in that article that I complained about so much in, was it Luke? Yeah, I'm going to go back to what I was talking about. Because this leads into this, you know, the separateness. I mean, this whole thing about nigga and nigga, right? So if it ends with an A, it's positive. Because Eazy-E said it was something positive to some white reporter in some mainstream goddamn new music magazine. One of them. It might have been Rolling Stone. It could have been any of them. I don't know. I'm still on New Music Express, right? You know, that's where my head is at. Anyways, what I'm trying to motherfucking say here is, you got this bullshit where you have black men who identify as niggas, right? Went from, you know, this negative thing, and as far as I'm concerned, it is still a goddamn negative thing that you've adopted what they've actually fucking called you, and you consider that to be empowering. See, that to me is the fucking excuse for using nigger. You know, what it became was a hipster goddamn thing within the black community, because, you know, it was radical at the fucking time. Like when group of early black writers doing, I believe, the 1920s, well, during the Harlem Renaissance, who called themselves the Niggerati. You know, the dark side that you know, the demi-monde of black society. Again, the shit that I complain about. You know, people think when I talk about pimping, I'm promoting pimping. No, I ain't not fucking promoting pimping. This shows you're not goddamn listening. I'm trying to point out that fucking pimping is a goddamn dynamic in the economic motherfucking system in the street. You understand what I'm saying? And obviously, it has an impact on male and female motherfucking relationships, because it is an exacerbation of those fucking relationships. You know, I mean, what do you think? You know, all this. I mean, how is it that we look at prostitution in the black community, and it is either a hip thing to motherfucking do, right? Even though there's no future in this motherfucking shit. You know, there's no security in it. You open yourself up to all kinds of goddamn things. You open yourself up to, you know, disease, to, you know, being, you know, to losing your goddamn life, to being, you know, abused. I mean, it's just a myriad of things that can happen. But then again, the same thing can happen if you're working at the lathe in the goddamn factory. You know, and if you're a woman who's working in a lot of industries, you might actually have to submit sexually just to fucking keep your job. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of difference in it. You know, I mean, the only thing about the black American pimping experience, you know, what I, again, was raised around. My family was very, very deep in that shit. I have never fucking done it. I'm against it, obviously. My politics are against it. But there's a wing of my family that has been their way of making a motherfucking living. That is the way they motherfucking did it, all right? And that shit goes right back to this fucking slave period, when you had, like I talked about, the boss nigga who had the carriage. He had earned the carriage during Reconstruction after working for Master, you know, after motherfucking Master passes on or whatever the fuck, or sells him the goddamn carriage, and he still had those suits, and he knew how to sign forms. He could read and write English. He could sign his own goddamn name. He would make deposits at the bank for the motherfucking master, all that type of bullshit. You know, he would probably, even the paymaster, paying the Irish and Polish motherfucking overseers. You understand what I'm saying? They knew how to manage money, you know, and they understood who was fucking who and which prostitutes and shit that the master liked that were white, and which girls on the plantation that the master liked, and he was the one that procured this. So when Reconstruction came around, when the slavery period was over, a lot of these masters, a lot of these old white overseers, a lot of those fucking white men still like to fuck black women. Just because, you know, the official system stopped didn't mean that, you know, their poontang runs had to fucking end. So, you know, their whole bullshit was, we can keep going on, you know, married like we've been going on. And that shit happened. That's why there's so many motherfuckers in this country look the way I do. Look like Obama. You dig what I'm saying? So, motherfucking, here we go. Right? We don't want to have that discussion because it opens up too many motherfucking wounds. For black people, it's embarrassing. You know, like when the, I want to say Jimmy Breslin. No, Jimmy the Greek. Another sports figure. His career was ruined because he told the truth. He was talking about the refrigerator. I think his name was Perry at the time. And I don't know anything about sports, but I remember this particular incident. he said that, well, you know, somebody asked him, a reporter asked him, had the cameras on, lights, camera, action, right? The focus is on him. And he asked him, why do Africans in the United States, well, he didn't say it that way, why do black, Americans excel at sports in the United States? You know, why do they excel? You know, when blacks came in, it kind of dominated a lot of things, except for like hockey or whatever. I'm paraphrasing, but it was along those lines. And Jiminy Greek gave him an honest goddamn answer. He said, well, during the slavery period, they were bred. They would take a strong, male and put them with a strong female so that they could do extra work in the field. Now, you had the black upper crust like Bill Cosby at that time. Because, outside of Hollywood, nobody really knew about what the fuck he was doing, right? But Bill Cosby and bullshit at that time. And this is before he had his Cosby show. This is, this is in between his Mr. Kincaid gig on television and his Cosby family thing. His Cosby show, the Huxtables, whatever the fuck was going on. This is when he was the athletic teacher, Mr. Kincaid, right? Yeah, the Cosby, the original Cosby show that I remember. But any goddamn way. I know, I'm sorry. I'm trying not to go on this. But, why am I talking about Hopper and certain types of Asians? Well, because, if you're an Asian female, and most of my Asian female friends have copped on to this, they don't get the same hassle that even a lot of white women get. Provided, of course, that they're young and cute. And one of my friends, and she admitted this, she will tell anybody. She paid for her her bus line. She said she wanted it. That was what she was going to do. And she fucking did it. And she says, life has been very, very different for her. Now, she was already married, but she decided to do this. And she said, now, she always got attention from white men. Well, she said she got attention from men any goddamn way because she's a very good looking woman. Just like we were talking about Sarah Palin, right? And, men are stupid. Really. And women who understand men know that men are stupid and can play goddamn men. And they get paid. But see, the thing about it is it only goes but so far. Men will never really give up their goddamn power to a woman unless they really fucking have to. See, the one of the things that you have to kind of respect about Margaret Thatcher.
She's gone.
She actually realized, I'm going to be in a fucking, on the field where male rule is the rule. And she decided that she wasn't going to fucking take any half steps, and she was going to have, if she was going to play with them, she was going to have to play on their fucking rules. Now, I didn't like anything that goddamn Margaret Thatcher did. Any working person shouldn't respect anything that Margaret Thatcher did. And when she said that, the British people were tired of being swamped by an alien culture, and all of a sudden they started attacking South Asians and goddamn black people in the streets and shit. Actually, we have to admit this too. In some of those motherfucking areas, there were black people who were jumping in on the Asians as well. They were jumping in on Pakistan people as well. So, we have to be honest about that shit. But anyways, any motherfucking ways. Anyways. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Lester. Anyways. Those who know that they can get over in a particular system, get over. This is why colorism is what it is in the black community. Which, again, kind of leads to the pimping. Because the boss Negro used to be sometimes this motherfucker's son. Now, he wouldn't necessarily acknowledge him as a son, but he had him with one of the women in which he owned. So, that's how that went a lot of the time, because he got a little more education, he got over a little bit, the bird heads that you hear about on these, various plantations, John McCain's family had them, the Washington plantation had them, the Jefferson plantation had them, the Madison plantation had them, they were all slave owners. Adams, they were all, they were all slave owners. Now, they might have argued for and against it in various points. Jefferson was arguing against it in terms of, was it viable? Right. But that didn't stop him from owning, his people. Even when he went to France and was questioned about this, he questioned the French saying they should mind their business. And they're like, you got a lot of goddamn nerve. You're writing about us. What the fuck you doing over here? They said, you own your son. What the fuck is that? So he paid them a salary when they were in Europe. And then when they got back, he said, this shit is going right back to the way it was. You know, I still own you and your mama. And that's it. Yeah, Sally Hemings, right? You know, which you would think, you know, and you ask the average black child in the United States, you know, of school age, who was Sally Hemings? They can't tell you. But they can tell you all about Beyonce. And see, but that at the same time, you know, I get these black folks to talk about a revolution. That's a problem. How are you going to have a revolution if they don't even know who the fuck Sally Hemings is and what her relationship was to, you know, her master, and how that dynamic influences the relationship between black women and white males to this day, and the relationship of female ownership in relationship to the state, right? And then how that that relationship funneled into what we call the pimping, right? You know, we don't put this shit together, and how that relates to the fucking economics and the socio-political fucking status of the goddamn hood, and why things are fucked up where we have 17-year-olds who are raising children. And I'm not exaggerating goddamn thing, because I remember when that was rare, if not unheard of. Now, yes, there may have been some communities where that was more common than others, but let me tell you something. You know, being Geechee, you know, being of my age group, and for my particular background, back in the day, if somebody was pregnant at 15, 16, 17, you know, we just assumed, rightly or wrongly, that it was a member of her family that was taking advantage of her. And the question was, which one of the males? Was it the father? Or was it one of, you know, her siblings? I mean, because this happens. And we know this goddamn happens. And back then, you couldn't talk about it. A woman couldn't discuss it. A mother would tell her daughter to fucking just shut up and not and just deal with it. And of course, she carries this for the rest of her life. And as she goes on through her experiences and meeting men and getting, you know, into romantic, you know, involvements, this baggage comes along. And then here, she's dealing, you know, unfortunately with a fucked up male, you know, who takes advantage of the fact that she's been, you know, discombobulated, whatever the fuck, because that cannot goddamn be normal. I don't give a fuck what anybody tries to rationalize, whatever the fuck these freaks try to explain their behavior. I mean, we got Catholic representatives, official fucking representatives of various archdioceses that go on these news talk programs on mainstream fucking news services and will sit here and say that these young people that have been abused by these predatory priests, well, somehow they wanted it or they deserved it or what have you, and they're sitting there wearing their clerical fucking clothing, sitting there waving their fucking hands, pontificating, and not anybody in an official fucking position of influence, be it political or moral. And I have to say, including El Papa, all right, says that that son of a bitch should be defrocked on the fucking spot. And the entire fucking organization in which he works for, if you're not going to take it down and destroy brick by brick, then you take a fucking big fucking broom and you sweep all the goddamn bastards out of it. But then what would happen? What did El Papa say? He said that fucking 1 in 50 of their goddamn priests, 1 in 50 of their clerics are sexual violators. Now, we can talk about, is it the type of people that go into the church? Or is it the structure of the monastic orders within the church? You know, well, not just the monastic orders, but the monastic vows of the church. Because if you know anything at all about the history of the Catholic Church, in the, you know, very beginning, priests were allowed to marry. Matter of fact, you were even allowed to be homosexual, you know, and have a partner, and your relationship would be recognized by the community. Look up John Boswell, Same-Sex Unions in Pre-Modern Europe. It's an excellent fucking read. Regardless of whatever your position is knowledge. You need to go check that. You know, because until, you know, before St. Augustine, you know, there was a little more humanity going on in religion. And you got to remember, you know, Christianity wasn't patent set, you know, back then. You know, I mean, it still isn't now. I mean, what? How many goddamn sects do you have? You know? You got the Protestants. You got the Catholics, right? You got the Southern Baptists and shit, you know, and none of you fucking get along. Then you got the Seventh-day fucking Adventists. You got the Mormons. And none of you get along. None of you get along. You all fucking hate each other and shit. And then you all hate in unison against somebody who says that all of the, you know, the fantasies and shit you believe in are just that, fucking fantasies. But again, what does this have to do with my comment about Asians? Well, what I'm trying to say is that you have a split within the Asian community. You're seeing Asian people holding up Trump signs. What makes them think that the racism that Trump is expressing and the racism that is supporting him, that these neo-Nazis will not turn on them? And, you know, I wanted to get some of the, you know, my Asian female friends on the mic, and you know, as usual, you know, no one wants to be put on the record for saying this. But two of them have suggested that they really believe. Now, remember, you know, these two women are, of course, political. They believe that there are some Asian women who are just, you know, they got this thing in their head that if it goes crazy, I'll be safe. Now, you know, that's a real fucking dynamic. And you have to understand something. You know, it happened in the Netherlands, I guess, where it was actually documented, on how many women the Nazis had as comfort women over it. Well, started off as comfort women, but some of them actually started building fucking families. Well, I mean, they had no reason to think that the war was ever going to end not in their favor. You know, they had completely taken over the goddamn Netherlands by this point, right? And what, a pretty good part of Finland too, and one half of the country, Finland, actually supported the Nazis. So they had no reason to think that they were going to fucking leave or be forced to leave. But, you know, and this is the same situation that happened in France. They really came down on these women afterwards. You know, of course. You know, and all of the other folks that they saw as collaborators. But you got to consider something, though. The women who were Dutch, that and French in Belgium, you know, who had hooked up with the Nazis when they came to town and set up shop, you know, who were really like out there, I'm with you, I like you, were willing to be seen in public, you know, and those that were actually pregnant by these cats, you know, were parading these children around town, right? You know, do you think they were going to raise them to be pro-Dutch? Or do you think they're going to raise them to be like Queslings, you know, to be supportive of whatever the Nazi father was going to do, you know, whatever the Nazi, you know, side of the family, those attitudes? I mean, what do you think happened with the assimilados in South America, especially in Brazil and in Uruguay and all throughout Mexico? The assimilado class was what? These were the sons and daughters. The sons and daughters of the I want to say Castellano. I mean, how many of them were really Castellano? I mean, a lot of them were Jewish too, right? But for the most part, the white conquistadores, the Spaniard landowners, the vast majority of them took native women as partners. And if they didn't marry them outright and Europeanize them, you know, through dresses and so on, how to receive guests and all that crapola, you know, cultured them, right? You know, they were still laying out kids with the female help and with other women that they decided to have. You know, that was always and always has been the prerogative of the colonializer, to take whatever woman they want because she doesn't belong to herself. But there's also, and the Catholic Church was clear about this, there's a plan in this that the more indigenous women that they marry, the easier it will be for them to Christianize and Europeanize the population. Thomas Jefferson talked about it in his notes on the state of Virginia, that if you take the African, you will never really, he called it unremovable veil of blackness. You will never be able to, no matter how much white blood you introduce into an African, they will always be black. There will always be the nigga in them. I'm paraphrasing. But he believed that Native Americans, on the other hand, because, you know, they show culture, they show intelligence, right? They had government systems before we got here, blah, 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 blah. He recognized that, even though he was like, yeah, take their goddamn land, no. But he recognized that, and then at the same time said, after about four or five generations, and perhaps after 6, there will be no trace of the European. This same mindset was going on in Australia, where they were paying men in some areas who were willing to fuck anybody, really, you know, or people that they assumed anyway would, you know, this, if you put lipstick on a skookum, you know, they'll have sex with it. And let's be honest, there are some males like that. It doesn't really matter to them. I mean, you know, bestiality laws in the South here in the United States. What the fuck you think that's about? You had that Republican son of a bitch, Neil Horsley, who admitted to, you know, fucking farm animals during his time as a youth. He said this to Alan Combs on the Alan Combs show. He said this on mainstream goddamn media and said, yeah, everybody does it. And it's like, Alan Combs is like, I don't know anybody that does anything like that. What the fuck are you talking about? You know, and he made it sound like it was, you know, as normal as anything else. So, you know, when you really look at a goddamn conservative, you got to ask yourself what the fuck was going on. You know, was what we saw in the Night of the Generals the real goddamn Nazi party? Or was that just, you know, propaganda against the Nazi party? See, I lean on the fucking side that bullshit was the goddamn Nazi party. You know, the torture, what happened in the camps is related to perversion. Okay, it's related to perversion. But see, the type of perversion that I'm talking about is not the type of perversion that these motherfuckers label everything as. You know, the idea of pleasure and freedom and people having, you know, some kind of humanity about them, they consider to be fucking strange. But on the other hand, waterboarding, torture, you know, animal slaughterhouses, these things are normal. Cluster munitions, that's normal. You know, the whole idea of the evolution of man, you know, you get motherfuckers who hate the idea of science. You know, they don't like the idea of climate science. They don't like the idea of evolution. They hate evolution. But on the other hand, they will tell you, because I've had these goddamn discussions with Republican fucking conservatives, because that's what I live around. They will fucking tell you that, you know, violence is human, is normal. It is normal for humans to be violent. It is normal for us to fight. That is why we have so much war, because it is in us. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Well, that's why we need guns, to protect ourselves from each other, because it is in us to be violent. And I'm saying, you have to understand something, man. You cause people to think like that because you're thinking like that. I don't walk around thinking that people are my enemy. And he's like, well, you know, well, I don't know how long you'll last. And, you know, ex-military, right? You know, a contractor, you know, past several years, and you know, he's really good at what he does, and we can have a conversation. He's, you know, I mean, he's not a jerk, but his worldview scares the fuck out of me, because it reeks of fear. A fear of everything. Fear of the dark. Fear of the light. You know, fear of women. You know, I pointed out to him that a lot of his, you know, we have conversations that it's not, his issues with women seem to be more about fear of women. And I don't mean a physical fear of getting beat up or anything. I mean, he has a real issue, I believe, with being able to open up to someone. And I think that's what, you know, a lot of men have a problem with. You know, not being able to be themselves and be open. Because, you know, you're supposed to be hard all the goddamn time. And you can't say that this hurts, you know, or I don't like this. Oh, I feel funny about this, because then, you know, even women look at you as like, you know, what's wrong with you? Why are you not hard? You know, so yeah. And yeah, I know I went on a bunch of goddamn tangents, but my point is that, you know, we have a social, political thing going on within most ethnic groups, in the sense that if they feel that they're mixed, if they feel that, they have enough education, if they feel that if they know the right people, if they feel that within their specific community where they live geographically, they're able to get up and go to the store and the police are not profiling them or what have you, they can support Trump. And there'll be no residual pain, you know, in the form of, you know, policies that he would support. You know, we already see people who anti-Trump getting beat up at his rallies. Immigrants getting beat up and urinated on. He's insulting women left and goddamn right. He's causing violence and all kinds of hate against Muslims. You know he doesn't goddamn like black people. So, you know, and then he's talking about punching people. And then his son is out here defending that. And there's some black, and I'm going to say it, Uncle Tom Preacher. I don't know his goddamn name. You know, he's, I suppose he's like that motherfucker over in Harlem, New York City, the Pastor Manning. You know, he's pro-Trump too. You know, talking about, yeah, you know, this idea of punching people, punching protesters is kind of exciting. You know, I mean, goddamn, United States, are we really going to do this? You know, did you not look at goddamn Yugoslavia? Do you not see what the fuck is happening in other fucking countries? Do you really want to do this? I mean, if Jesus Christ exists, God damn. I mean, do something about your fucking flock. You know, I mean, fucking Donald Trump makes up Bible verses. The motherfucker's not for real. He's not for real. He makes up things. Pig's blood stories. He makes up things. And you are under a serious fucking illusion. You are under a serious fucking illusion if you think that being of color, but being an ass kisser, is going to protect you. You know, you got another thing fucking coming. And see, this is, again, what I'm trying to explain to these, you know, Hotep wannabe goddamn revolutionaries, who I really don't want to hear from any goddamn, from any goddamn way, because you had Baltimore and Ferguson to start exactly the type of motherfucking action you were talking about, and none of you did any goddamn thing. As soon as the fucking Oath Keepers showed up, that's a paramilitary organization. They're not motherfucking official cops. And I'm talking about the first time they showed up. Supposedly to support the local law enforcement, who, according to Anonymous, was allowing Frank Anacona, the head of the Klan there, to use their fucking computers, right? So, you know, that's a story you can look up, because it wasn't really reported in the mainstream goddamn media, but, you know, people like Little Green Footballs and whatever had picked it up, you know. But, you know, when the Oath Keepers showed up, the new Black Panther Party, who have nothing to do with the original Black Panther Party for self-defense, they could have went there, and I guess they were there, but did they challenge the Oath Keepers? I don't know. I mean, I did see two reports in the black blogosphere, though, that showed some gun-toting black cats who claimed to be some radical whatever the fuck, sharing tea and bubblegum with some fucking Oath Keepers. And there was another handful of fucking black conservatives that doing one of these anti-Black Lives Matter protests where they gunned up and were standing with the white folks. So, you know, you want to do a revolution, really? Because when the second round came, because the first time it came, the FBI came there and made them leave, right? The second time, there were no federal troops. So these cats came. And, you know, they're with the police. And the protesters are standing there. So, I mean, you know, what the fuck? You know, what the fuck? So, no, I don't want to hear all that revolution shit, because it's stupid. Okay? It's ridiculous fucking talk, man. You know, it's just talk. You know, we need to be able to discuss this shit like rational goddamn human beings. Yeah, that's what the fuck the democratic process is fucking about. And if I sound like a punk to you because I believe that we need to sit at the motherfucking table and have a goddamn discussion, then I'll be a punk to you. Okay? You know, whatever the fuck makes you goddamn happy, you know. But regardless, you know, the original Black Panther Party for Self-Defense platform is correct. There needs to be a plebiscite. And before that, there needs to be a period of motherfucking education. And, you know, we have to be honest with each other about what the fuck is really happening and how we got to this point, and point fingers at those that have really done the damage, instead of being angry with each other and taking shit out on each other and hurting ourselves. I mean, when you look at the white people that are complaining, that are supporting Trump, I mean, they're blaming minorities for everything, but black people are not putting heroin in them. Black folks are not giving them diabetes and putting sugar in their diet, right? You know, black people are not forcing them to drink, you know, soda, soft drinks, you know, to eat pizza and you know, nonsense like this. You know, they're doing this to themselves. They're drinking themselves. into, you know, stupors. And this shit is now causing them to have a elevated life expectancy. You know, not elevated life expectancy. I mean, elevated propensity for a low life expectancy. You know, the life expectancy of the average Caucasian in the United States has gone down. And for the first time, the life expectancy rates have actually gone up for Africans and Latinos who have jobs, of course, and access to health care. And for Native Americans, it's still declining. But nobody's talking about that. Nobody wants to discuss that. You know, that's not an issue for discussion, because who cares about Native Americans, right? So, you know, where are we? So let's try to wind all this back here. You know, going back to the black folks in television bit, you know, you got to understand something. You know, the majority of the what the fuck is going on. And we can, you know, talk about hurting people's feelings and assuming the black people are stupid and all that. I mean, that's not where the fuck I'm goddamn coming from. That's certainly not where the fuck I'm goddamn coming from. But see, you can't, you know, there's no way you can get people to listen to you, because once they get on attack, it's really hard to get motherfuckers off. You know, in serious. And it becomes like the goddamn witch trials. And I'm not exaggerating in that. I'm not exaggerating by saying that. I'm not. You know, I mean, think about it for a moment. You know, there are so many women now that are supporting Hillary Clinton for the simple fact that she's female, and will tell you straight out, it's time for a woman to become president. Well, you know, under different circumstances, I would agree with you. See, now, you know, there are people who are angry with me in the Native community because I don't hate Elizabeth Warren, and I'm being serious about that. The last time I went to Seattle, you know, met with some folks, we took care of our, you know, how should I define this? Because I'm not supposed to talk about it, right? Because it's not supposed to be connected to anything that I do, you know, outside of this group. But, you know, it's an advocacy group, and it's not really political. But the people involved, of course, are activists. I mean, we're all, you know, political somewhere else. And, you know, you go to the coffee stage afterwards and get your fucking biscotti and overpriced motherfucking latte. You know, Seattle is Seattle, right? And, I mean, goddamn, man, you know, I didn't even mention Elizabeth Warren. But I did mention the Green Party, which has nothing to do with Elizabeth Warren, because the Green Party is Dr. Jill Stein, unless something's changed. And I didn't get the memo, right? So what it came down to was, I still haven't condemned her. Now, for those of you who aren't aware of what's going on with that, especially in the UK and Australia where this show is heard, and no, I'm not forgetting you, Hobart, I'm not forgetting you. All right, I'm not forgetting New Zealand. Just saying, last time we checked, was anybody listening down? But anyhow, you know, the deal is that. So the deal is that I'm supposed to hate on her, and I mean literally hate on her, like I know her personally, because you know she's claiming a Cherokee background. And no one seems to believe that she's Cherokee, right? She hasn't confirmed this, you know, somehow, all this type of shit. Now, look, with the Cherokee being the whitest goddamn group in the you know, all of what's left of Native America, and, you know, you can minimize me, whatever the fucking B-map, because I said it like that, but let's just face facts. We don't have any goddamn power. We're just existing here. We're not fucking thriving. Right, you know, we're in no fucking political or economic or territorial fucking position to challenge a goddamn thing. So, you know, for those of you who are upset with what the fuck I just said, be upset. See, this is the same argument I have with the black community. You get mad about the wrong motherfucking shit, and then, you know, you're really not understanding the entire fucking thing of what you're talking about. What does a state mean? What does a nation mean? You're talking about revolution. What does that really fucking involve? Just fighting people in the goddamn streets? Then what? I'm serious about this. But anyway, before I get lost again, you know, this person started and said, well, you know, have you said anything yet, you know, in, you know, on this show and what have you, about her claim? And I said, well, other than she needs to say yay and nay, you know, the fact, I don't know how she can actually prove it, but I'm just saying, you know, as far as Nate is being pissed with her about that, go ahead and continue to be angry with her about that. I didn't say not be angry about it. You know, see, I really can't stand when people are like, well, you told us, I didn't tell you what the fuck to do. You know, I voiced a goddamn opinion. And my opinion is this is not the number one goddamn issue facing Native Americans. It's not. You know, you got, everybody's looking at Flint right now. Well, how bad has the water been in fucking Native, you know, in Indian country? Which is more of an issue, whether or not this particular fucking politician is really goddamn Native or isn't? No, you lean on her about that bullshit, but you don't make that the focus of every goddamn thing. You know, and I said to them, you know, what got me the most about this is that there were Natives who would not get up and mad about the, you know, the water situation when I bring it up in Indian communities. They don't want to discuss it. They don't want to talk about it. You know, they don't want to talk about education very much. You know, unless they're trying to get their goddamn degree, you know, then they want to talk about education. But when you talk about, hey, everybody on the fucking res maybe needs to not have to pay for fucking advanced education. Well, they'll say, well, yeah, I support that, but they won't get up to do anything the fuck about it. You see? So, you know, that's just a lot of goddamn lip service. But, you know, all I said was, is that, no, this is not the number one motherfucking pressing thing. And a lot of them came up with groups at the time, and there were even some websites and some specific blogs that were set up to deal with that, to basically hound her out of the political race that she was dealing with at the time. And I also pointed out at the time, and I can't even remember what the fucking details were, but she was running for something, and then she had the whole, you know, her position as the Wall Street bit, right, of bringing them to account. But the bottom fucking line was, you know, I asked them, are you trying to help the Republicans with this? You know, what is this? And really, it was just like a bandwagon to fucking jump on. So, okay, so here's some red meat, so everybody fucking went at it. And then, you know, the other shit that she was talking about, labor rights, getting Wall Street, you know, getting these motherfuckers to have to account for what the fuck they did, the subprime loans, all that type of shit. Mm-mm. That went by the wayside. And then, you know, when you really look at it, it wasn't a whole lot of fucking people, you know, as usual. You know, and this is where Barbara Tuchman's law comes in, right? You know, just because you see a minority of things, or like you see a news report of something, you know, you would think perhaps that there's violence that's going on all the goddamn time, you know, even though you can get up and go to work, go home, go to school, go to the, you know, shopping, go to the park, you know, all these types of things, and nothing will happen to you. No mugging, no violence, you know, nothing like that. But the more that is reported, because you're focused on that, you tend to think that that's the whole fucking, you know, view of every goddamn thing, because that is your, the limit of your experience. And this is where I'm going back to what's going on with Sanders and, you know, the black vote. If people knew what the fuck Hillary was really about, even Fox isn't doing this. They're still harping about Benghazi. They're not talking about the fact that she was advocating incarcerating motherfucking black youths as super predators, which is what she did with things like that. She was also for defunding welfare and all fucking social services like that. Has Bernie Sanders been involved in anything like that? Absolutely not. Now, you get a whole lot of black activists that want to clown Bernie Sanders about, well, just because he was involved in the fucking civil rights movement back then doesn't mean shit now. I mean, what the fuck is the man supposed to do? Bleed every goddamn day? You know, every fucking week and shit? You know, he has to shed blood. He has to be on TV. He has to always be saying something to be down with your movement. You know, it's like people who get angry with Amy Goodman and complain to me, well, she doesn't do this and she doesn't do that. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Have you watched the show regular? Well, no, I don't watch this. What the fuck are you talking about? You know, watch the goddamn show. So you want a black issue as the first issue she talks about for every episode. And the fucker admitted, yeah, that's what I want. I said, well, then that's crazy. you know, first off, they're an international goddamn show that's based in the fucking United States, and they highlight these fucking issues all the goddamn time. Okay. And he was like, well, you argue like you know her personally. I said, no, I don't know her goddamn personally. But the fucking point is, I'm familiar with her fucking work. You just admitted that you're not. And then you're fucking saying, well, basically, she's not doing what I want her to do, so then fuck her. My question is, if you're really going to talk all this Malcolm X shit and do these sound bites, why don't you have your own motherfucking news program? I didn't hear back from him. You see? You know, I mean, yeah, you know, black folks who are going for Hillary Clinton are going for Hillary Clinton because, one, some of them, they just don't know any better. But even if they did know better, some of them, they're going to go with the devil that they know, you know, because they're too motherfucking scared to make a goddamn decision to be fucking independent while they're talking about being independent. You know, that's why I don't want to hear this crapola about fucking Beyonce being some kind of a fucking leader. Beyonce is not a goddamn leader. Okay, you know, we can say thank you, Beyonce, for giving up some of your motherfucking millions to the causes that you've done and for not being a jerk about it and promoting the fact that you just gave up some money. I mean, that's great, you know, fine. But your husband still believes that his fucking presence is charity, which I still find goddamn offensive. All right. And the fact that Reverend Al Sharpton, who was already, you know, a snitch, a professional fucking snitch who tried to set up Assad Shakur, because a lot of you are mad with Bernie Sanders over his vote on Assad Shakur. I can understand that. He should be questioned about that, but you notice that nobody's actually questioning him about that. Right? They're just condemning him for that. But these same people, though, ask them how they feel about Maxine Waters and the entire CBC when they voted for it. Because she sent a letter to Fidel Castro to basically explain why they voted for it, saying we didn't know what the fuck we were voting for. I'm not putting words in her mouth. Go look it up. Look it up. Hillary Clinton is supportive of Assata? Since when? Is she supportive of reparations? Since when? Because that's the whole thing, right? Luke, you know, well, you know, he doesn't support reparations. Well, he's a socialist. They don't support shit like that. They've never supported shit like that, you know? So, but if you understand socialism, you'd understand that. Right, but he can be edged along this way. Hillary Clinton will not be edged along that way. You don't have enough money to buy her to edge along that way, right? So somebody, oh, well, that's a sexist remark. You're talking about buying her. Look, politicians are bought and sold every goddamn day, and prostitutes are not just female. So, you know, you can kiss my motherfucking ass with that. Right, we talk about that bullshit here on a regular goddamn basis. You're talking to the wrong motherfucker if you're going to come to me with that. All right? You know, I mean, Elizabeth Warren is female, but she was saying the right goddamn things. Should she be checked on that particular shit? Certainly. But if you're going to motherfucking nitpick with Bernie Sanders on these little fucking things that, you know, you care about right now, I mean, Assad has been in exile for a while. Why all of a sudden do you care? I'm being serious. You know, she's been, you know, leading your support for how long? You know, and then when they put her on the motherfucking terrorist watch list, a whole lot of other people just scattered. It's still a police brutality case, no matter how the fuck you look at it. And after everything that's been going on, the frame-ups, everything else that's been going on, men being exonerated and shit with DNA evidence. Yeah, I mean, you know, with everything else that's going on, why doesn't her case need review? Why doesn't Leonard Peltier need review? Why doesn't Amir Abu-Jamal need review? What the fuck are we looking at with Albert Woodfox? But he had to cop a plea in order to motherfucking see daylight. Two brothers survived from the Angola 3. One brother died 3 days after they fucking finally let his ass out. So that way he didn't die, you know, in hole. 43 years in the motherfucking hole. Now, that is an instance or a circumstance in which the black community could have rallied. They didn't. 43 fucking years, you've had more than 4 decades to support this brother. Where have you been? Now, all of a sudden, you know, fuck Sanders to the point where he's just as bad. Yeah, there's people out there making, you know, Jew comments, and it turns out there's even people in the DNC that are making Jew comments. In Nevada, we're also seeing Klansmen show up to support Trump. You know, so it's like, this is chaos. So, you know, all I can say, brother and sister, is you really need to fucking look deeper. You really need to fucking look deeper. and not be angry when someone says to you, you don't really understand. Because a lot of the shit that I'm hearing is, you don't understand. You know, a lot of you want to vote for Clinton because you like her. You don't know anything fucking about her. If you look at her goddamn policies, how the fuck could you want to have anything to goddamn do with her? Has Sanders made some fucked up votes? Yeah, he's made some fucked up votes. He's had to play politics like every goddamn buddy else, but he's been a socialist his entire motherfucking career. He supported the same shit his entire fucking career. I don't know what the fuck people expect. All of a sudden they want perfection out of a political fucking thing, but they'll accept imperfection from Hillary Clinton? And in the meantime, you know, the black community is not saying a goddamn thing in mass about what the fuck is the mainstream media has been doing with Trump. They've been basically giving him free fucking advertising. Now he's sweeping. He's insulting everybody. He gets neo-Nazi support, Klan support. He's even got the fucking Scottish National Front goddamn supporting him. And, you know, none of this is, you know, the black community can't come out and say, hey, this motherfucker's a Nazi. He's a fucking Nazi. And demand that Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders call him out on that. But see, here's the thing. Bernie Sanders has called out Trump on his racism. Has Hillary Clinton? She wants to be president. That's all the fuck we know. You know, and we know who she's going to support, and it's not going to be us. It's not going to be us. So, you know, you can go on with this where you want to, but, you know, we're really in some serious, serious trouble. And people have to be willing to say to themselves, I don't understand what the fuck's going on. And, you know, it's redundant for me to have to come up and keep saying this, but the more conversations I'm having with people, the more I'm realizing a lot of folks just don't know what to do. You know, the progressive movement, you know, even for those who consider themselves to be progressive and conservative, you know, is totally frozen. Totally frozen. It's like a deer in headlights, you know, doesn't know what the fuck to do. And Trump is taking advantage of this. And Clinton is just hoping that, well, you know, she'll just pick up residual support. But we all know that if you're looking at the type of bullshit that's happening with fucking Trump, if he wins the goddamn nomination and Hillary goes against him, it's really going to be a coin toss. At least with Sanders, you know what the fuck you get. You know, because, you know, really it's just two Republicans who are running against each other. And I know there's folks getting upset because people are starting to identify Hillary Clinton as exactly as what the fuck she is, a, you know, Republican. I mean, really. She's a liberal Republican, just like her husband. You know, it's just be the same thing. It'll be the same thing. I mean, the one thing you can say about when Bill was in, I was able to get a job. You know, it no longer than 2 weeks. It usually took me to find a job. No, it probably wasn't something I liked, but it was something I could do until I could get something else, right? You know, I mean, there was work. You know, underpaid goddamn work, but there was work. But then, you know, after NAFTA and GATT, then what happened? Right? That was him. You know, I mean, Reagan and Bush couldn't get that shite passed, but he did. So if you want more of the same, then, you know, you can go on with Clinton if you fucking want to, but you're going to be getting more of the goddamn same. So what's the motherfucking point? Does that make any sense? No, it doesn't make any sense. You know, and this black backlash against Sanders, you know, identifying him with racism, identifying him with the Illuminati and all that kind of shit. Well, how the fuck can you identify Sanders with the Illuminati when Hillary Clinton is actually taking money from the motherfuckers you guys identify as the Illuminati? He's not taking their money. She is. She's part of the military industrial complex. He isn't. She's part of the prison industrial complex. He isn't. So, you know, I don't know what the fuck is going on other than you don't know what the fuck to do. So you're just going to take the easiest goddamn path. You know, the path of least resistance where you don't have to think about any goddamn thing. In the meantime, you'll wonder why Beyonce hasn't run for office, right? And let's be honest about this shit, too. If Beyonce looked like Odetta and had buck teeth, you know, was just a big black woman, with any and wore her head naturally, none of you would give a fuck, probably. And when I say you know who I'm talking about. Most people wouldn't give a fuck about Beyonce in this goddamn video. Most people wouldn't fucking care. They wouldn't give a fuck about Beyonce at all. You know, if she looked like Odetta, nobody would give a fuck. If she looked like any, you know, Nina Simone. I mean, come on, man. And come on, well, what the fuck am I talking about? The black community allowed Nina Simone to be put out there in blackface. I mean, Zoe Saldana, okay, yeah, she's cool, but I mean, goddamn, man, really? You don't look anything like Nina goddamn Simone. And you let them put you in blackface to play Nina Simone. We're talking about the blackest woman ever who took music and politics. I mean, this is the American answer to Fela. And they let her go out in blackface. But I'm an Uncle Tom. But you're still hanging on Beyonce with her blonde hair. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of sisters out here who are doing music that's talking serious shit. You know, XO Boogie, sorry for being black, right? I don't know how she looks, but does she get the respect Beyonce gets? No, you know. And I think I saw a little photograph of her. Does she look like Beyonce? No, I don't think so. You know, so nobody's going to care, right? But we never talk about that shit, right? We never talk about why we pay attention to what the fuck we pay attention to. This ghetto fabulous bullshit. So if you don't look the way, like, if you don't look like Beyonce and you don't do that fucking straightening process with your hair and you don't, you know, make your hair look European, you know, we're not going to pay any attention to you. You know, even though you might have actually been doing revolutionary music this entire time and she does a video where I saw a fur coat and all kinds of bullshit that is totally counter-revolutionary, that the Black Panther Party that was part of that shit wouldn't approve of. That was their whole goddamn thing. To get rid of the fucking ghetto. To get rid of the fucking drug dealers. To get rid of the fucking the black market. To get rid of the bogus goddamn bullshit. And to actually get down to building a nation. See? Sarafina did not free South Africa from apartheid. You know, it was a rallying point at some point, you know, but that was not the movement. And anybody that thinks that is fucking crazy. Because that, what that really means is, you know, while we're talking about Mandela and looking at the historic compromises that allowed for the University of the Free State motherfucking rugby riot to happen over there yesterday, you know, black students being beaten up on a goddamn, you know, rugby pitch in South Africa. I mean, goddamn. And then being shot by white folks in South Africa under an ANC government. Okay, Mandela and historical compromises. We have to ask ourselves, because we really don't know, but we have to ask ourselves, would Stephen Biko have made those compromises? There's other people I can name. But I'll leave it with that. This is the Angry Indian. You've been listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, and I'm sure Lupe is going to have some audio for you that will be enlightening. Okay, till the next time. Please take care of yourselves. Peace.
You are listening to Aboriginal Press News Service Public Radio. Indigenous talk radio for Celtic Scotland and other people living in the fourth world.
Communities used to leave their doors unlocked, both in Europe and in America. That's the way America once was. When I was a kid, we didn't have to worry about even locking our doors. I took my bicycle to school at 7 years old, and of the hundreds of bicycles at my school, not a single one had a bicycle lock. It was a different culture, but our culture's been taken over. You know it, I know it. The people who run Hollywood, they admit about it. They admit it and brag about it. Just watch the video, Hollywoodism, by Jacovici and these other Jews that talk about how the Jews invented Hollywood, how they took over Hollywood, and they changed and subverted the culture of America. And television is full of violence and blood and sickness and degeneracy and torture, you name it. It's just like a blood fest. and every sort of the degenerate aspect of our society, right? And this came along with the change of the gatekeepers of our culture. And they're the gatekeepers. They admit this. The New York Times, David Brooks of the New York Times, talks about the Jewish takeover of the American elite. That's the real elite that's ruling us. That's what's really going on, folks. Mr. Gabler, in his book, An Empire of Their Own, which is called the Jewish, it's the Jewish creation of modern Hollywood. Every one of the major Hollywood studios, the top 10 studios in Hollywood, are all controlled by Zios, by Jewish extremists. And they're not only Jews, that they're active in the Jewish community. And just if you want to know the Jewish position, and we're talking about the organized Jews. We're not talking about every Jew, because there are some Jews that oppose Jewish racism. Not many, but there are some that do, and I absolutely respect them. In fact, it takes as much courage for a Jew these days to talk about Jewish racism and Jewish supremacism than it does for one of our people to talk about it in a real sense. They can really be ostracized in their own community. There's actually more discussion about Jewish racism and Jewish supremacism and Jewish crimes in the Israeli media than there is in the American media, which is controlled by the Jewish people here. That's what's interesting about this whole process, isn't it? So I respect some Jews, obviously. But if you want to gauge the effect of a people overall, you have to look and see what their organizations do. Some people say, some Jewish groups say it's $3 billion worth of work in these entire extremely powerful organizations. They run all kinds of think tanks, activist organizations, the most prominent organization in favor of amnesty in this country. And they admit it and they boast about their role in Congress is the American Hebrew Immigrant Society. That's it. So they promote mass immigration, non-Europeans into America. At the same time, they're a Jewish group and they've supported massive Jewish immigration in America, but they support Israel, which has the toughest immigration policy in the world. This is a major group, well-funded, a huge lobbying group in America. And every major Jewish organization, the most powerful organization, Jewish organization in America and the world today, is called, other than what's going on in the Israeli state, is the AJC, the American Jewish Congress, the American Jewish Committee, excuse me. And both of those organizations. And both those organizations, I can show you, they boast about how that these are organizations that fight for the Jewish agenda. And guess what the Jewish agenda is? They boast about the fact that they have opened the borders of America and Germany and France and European countries. They've opened the borders. They have led every legislative action on opening our borders and our Congress. The leaders of these movements have been Jews, and more Jews. The testimony before Congress, American Jewish Committee, American Jewish Congress, and on and on and on. The ADL. The ADL is supposed to be one of the human rights organizations that they support Israel, which is theoretically just massacres thousands of Palestinian children, destroys whole neighborhoods wholesale. They talk about homemade missiles going from Palestine into Israel, but they don't.
John, welcome to the show.
Dr. John.
Hello. Yes, go ahead, sir, quickly.
What it amounts to is that you've got no chance whatsoever with Israel at all. Anything that is said or done against Israel is wrong, and the only way that you can do anything with Israel is to agree with them and do what they want you to do, and then you're a friend. Other than that, you're anti-Semitic and you're anti-Israel.
Why do we keep giving them money?
Pardon?
Why do we keep giving these people money?
Because
they're the biggest lobby in
America, and every single politician is frightened out of their lives of them because they own the media, or most of it, or a lot of it.
Who owns the media?
Of it,
who?
And the journalists.
Hold on. Who owns the media?
Who owns?
The media.
The Jewish people that are the owners of the media.
Well, you see, I kind of knew that that's where you are heading, so I wanted you to confirm it.
Just look it up.
John.
Look up the register of directors.
John, listen to me. listen to me. Jewish people don't own any of the television networks in the United States. None. Jewish people don't own any of the big newspapers in the United States. None. Jewish people don't own any of the TV networks in Britain. None. And Jewish people don't own any of the serious newspapers in Britain. None. You see, that's what happens when you follow your bigoted prejudice. You end up around the back somewhere. I'm afraid the truth is rather more difficult to confront than that. And I'm going to confront it.
Missy Elliott for the Black AIDS Institute.
HIV happens to us more than it does anybody else, which is why we should all get tested, because if we don't step up, then nobody will.
Get informed, get tested, get treated, and get involved. For more information, call the Black AIDS Institute at 213-353-3610. That's 213-353-3610. Or online at www.blackaids.org.
I Don't Know More calls all people
to join in peaceful revolution,
to honor indigenous sovereignty,
and protect the land and water
for generations to come.
Mexicans, South Americans, all indigenous people, get inspired,
take action,
and become a part of the solution.
It's my future,
your future,
our future.
We are the protectors of Mother Earth.
Stand up and protect it.
Stand up and protect it.
Stand up
and protect our earth.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
And become a part of this incredible movement.
The time has come.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Idle no more. Become idle no more.
Violence. Directly, I've lost a few friends.
I've been affected by gun violence over the years. It's through deaths of friends and family members and associates.
When I was 5 years old, I was held at gunpoint in a home invasion.
I've gone to the juvenile detention centers, and I've met dozens of young kids, babies really, who have been affected by gun violence. Directly, I've lost a few friends, but I think what why this touches my heart is having children of my own.
You know, I've been at parties where, you know, I had just left the party and, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes later, you know, I heard that, you know, somebody got shot and didn't make it.
There are a lot of people benefiting off of our pain, and it's time we do something.
I'm here to unload my investment because I think that it's important that we start kind of seeing where our money is going.
It's time to go to your financial advisor and demand that there are no gun investments in your 401k.
Even if you don't have investments, you can still help spread the word.
This is something everyone can do.
So if you push your people that have 401ks, it might be your grandma, it might be your cousin, this effort can make a big impact.
I'm unloading for my loved ones that I lost.
I'm unloading for my 18-year-old self.
I'm unloading my 401k for the future of my children.
I'm unloading.
I'm unloading
for my family and their future.
I'm unloading so that my daughter can grow up in a safe, loving world.
Unload and join the movement.
Use hashtag I'm unloading to pledge your support for gun-free investing.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Inform yourself about Plan B emergency contraception. Information can be the best protection, especially dealing with asexual assault or unprotected sex. If you are 17 or older, you do not need a prescription to receive Plan B. All Indian Health Service facilities should carry Plan B, but most don't. This is a violation of your reproductive rights. Call your local Indian Health Service unit and ask for Plan B. It is our right as Native women to receive Plan B. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice.
poetry is black. Poetry is black people. You know, black people like black poetry is black people like you and me moving and grooving and gliding and doing the shiggling.
Who will survive America? Few Americans. Very few Negroes and no crackers at all. Who will survive America? Few Americans, very few Negroes, and no crackers at all.
Who will survive America? Very few Negroes, no crackers at all.
In the heat and fire, acts will change. I doubt it.
Very few Negroes, no crackers at all.
Will you survive, woman, or will your nylon wig catch a fire at midnight and light up Sterling Street and your ass prints on the pavement? Grease was melting in this brother's eyes. His profile was shot up by a Simba. Thinking it was coming around the corner was really Tony Curtis, and not a misguided brother got his mind hanging out with our Italians. Survive America. The black future will. You can't with the fat stomach between your ears, scraping nickels out the inside of nigger daydreams. Few Americans, very few Negroes, maybe no red Negroes at all. Who will survive America? Who will survive America? The stiff back chalk lady Baptist in blue lace. If she shrinks from blackness in front of the church, following the wedding of the yellow robots, not survive. She's old anyway, and they moving her church in the wind. Old people, no. Christians, no. First Negroes, be invisible to truth. 1944 Minnesota, no, no. Nothing of that will be anywhere. It will be burned clean. It might sink and steam up the sea. America might, and no Americans, very few Negroes will get out there. No crackers at all. No crackers at all. No crackers at all. No crackers, no crackers at all. But the black man will survive America. His survival will mean the death of America. Survive, black man. Survive black man.
Hey yo, what's up y'all? This is DJ Spooky, that Subliminal Kid, giving y'all a wild style shout out. You're rolling with a podcast that's licensed under the Creative Commons license. So I just want to say, check it, download it, remix it, transform it. This is all about the wild style remix. So once again, Creative Commons, y'all, DJ Spooky, wild styles in your area. Subliminal minded.
Society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
And we'll talk about they don't hate anyone and they don't wish to see people maybe being killed. They say those things publicly because it sounds good for the camera. But when the cameras are shut off, members of organized white supremacist groups do sit around plotting to kill people, talk about assassinating people and blowing up buildings.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
This is APNS Public Radio.
The opinions expressed in dispatches represent the analysis of the participating editors and may not necessarily reflect the group positions of the ANG or its public news wires.
We are pleased, as always, to have Chip Berlay on the phone, one of the, if not the most dependable experts on the far right in this country going back many years. He's a senior analyst at Political Research Associates. He's co-author of Right-Wing Populism in America. And over the past year, he has traveled to Idaho, Montana, Washington, and other areas to research the rise of the Tea Party and the return of the militia movement. Thanks for joining us today on Beyond the Pale, Chip.
I'm delighted in a grim way.
Well, we thought you could start by these numbers that came out in the Southern Poverty Law Center's spring intelligence report, where they're noting a dramatic rise in patriot movement and militia movement groups, as well as what it calls nativist extremist groups, meaning not just anti-immigrant groups, but groups that directly confront and harass suspected immigrants, sort of the violent wing of the anti-immigrant movement. What did they find?
Well, they found that across the right, there's been a tremendous increase in energy and activity and the formation of a number of groups in states around the country. In some cases, some states have anywhere between 10 and 30 active organizational meetings going on in different counties very often. And these distinctions are important because they talk about a larger dynamic. If you have a very, very large angry populist movement in a society, and in this case, one that is gravitating towards the right, it does two things. It tracks the nearest major political party, in this case the Republican Party, and pulls it to the right because the politicians opportunistically want that energy activity mobilized into support for Republican Party candidates. So they pander, essentially. And for reasons known only to their privileged selves, the Democratic Party leadership has been dutifully following the Republican Party to the right until very recently. And now they seem to be having an internal power struggle over whether the Obama administration should toughen up and remain true to some of the promises made about progressive reform, or just simply collapse into the center and be Republican light. Way over on the other side of the political spectrum, to the right of this large, relatively conservative populist movement, you have the organized hate groups and the xenophobic groups, groups that traditionally have targeted immigrants, primarily immigrants defined as being of color. In the 1800s, that would include Italians and Irish people as well as Russians, and targeting black people and Jews. And then as well, in some cases, Muslims. It gets complicated because in the ultra-right, there are some groups who have a tactical alliance with Islamic terrorists because they've attacked the Zionist-occupied government in their thinking, which would be the government of the United States, which in conspiracy circles is seen as beholden either to secret elites or Dick Cheney and a group of bourbon-drinking powerful people in Wall Street or Jewish bankers.
Well, this suspicion of the federal government obviously goes to the heart of the political moment, and we want to come back to that. But I did want to just put out a couple of the shocking numbers that the Southern Poverty Law Center found through its tracking, that among these violent anti-immigrant groups, that the numbers have almost doubled from 2008 to 2009, from 173 such groups to 309, and that among the patriot movement, along with its paramilitary wing, the militias, a 2.5 times jump, that 363 new patriot groups appeared last year, including 42 new militia groups. And the militia movement, in the wake of Timothy McVeigh and the Oklahoma City bombing, was generally considered to be on the wane in this country. So to see a spike like this is quite troubling. And for me to read from a keen observer like yourself, the following line: we are in the midst of one of the most significant right-wing populist rebellions in United States history, kind of sent chills up my spine.
And mine, and a lot of other folks who, and like yourselves, both of you are adept veteran analysts of right-wing movements. I've contacted a number of colleagues around the country who do this work, and some of whom I've known 30 years now, and everyone is pretty much on the same page, with a few exceptions, saying this energy is profound, it's deep, and it's the dilemma here is, what do you do when there are so many people in a society, and we're talking primarily about white, middle-class, working-class people, who, you know, to borrow the phrase from Habermas, they see a crisis of legitimacy. They no longer see the government as legitimate. And in these periods, that can be a moment for progressive organizing, but in the current instance so far, it has primarily been a moment for right-wing organizing.
And Chip, the Tea Party movement is obviously there, and it's to the right of the Republican Party, and it is an embodiment of this rage and anxiety that you've described, but they're not the militias. So what is it that takes a legitimate, angry, fearful group of people and opens up whatever that border is between them and what ends up being real violence, serious violence?
And let me just, as a side note, add to that, David Barstow's really kind of impressive piece where he traveled the country tracking the rise of the Tea Party movement found, for example, in a place like Indiana, groups organizing what they called meetups between Tea Party groups and as many as 50 different patriot organizations. So there's clearly a conscious effort to be linking the scattershot anger of the Tea Party movement and these more disturbing armed anti-government groups.
Yes, and, you know, it was really an excellent piece, and I preferred it in its original form in the alternative press. A number of writers, David Weigel, myself, others, have written exactly the same story months ago, and, of course, the Times chose not to mention that, even though they went back to the same states and interviewed some of the similar people. Yes, that's what's going on. And so what is the dynamic that goes on? I mean, let's start with the fact that's reported in Rage on the Right by SPLC that 61% of Americans believe the country is declined. And then the question then for people who have become part of this angry center, as it's called a number of names, the right-wing populism, the angry center, middle American radicals, I think we're talking about the same people. These people in some periods shift to the left, like during the Roosevelt administration, they clearly shifted to the left. A number of them in the 80s actually supported the political candidacy of Jesse Jackson. So we're talking about people for whom there's a range of issues, and it's the classic race, class, gender. They're concerned about race, they're concerned about gender issues like abortion and gay rights, and they're concerned about the economy and their sense that they're falling down into a pit while the wealthy elites are getting richer. And in that, you know, analysis, they're correct.
They're absolutely correct.
They're absolutely correct. So here's the situation. At some point, people reach out to them and what's called mobilize them and then recruit them. There's two steps in sociology. The mobilizing them has happened, and unfortunately, it's overwhelmingly done on the right. And now the battle is, can we reach out as progressives to these folks and say, you're right to be angry, but, you know, it's a better coalition involves a whole range of people who don't embrace these conspiracy theories about Obama and the secret elites and, you know, he's really a Muslim and he's working for, you know, a nest of CP Communist Party activists in Chicago who groomed him and put him into power on behalf of, you know, name your scapegoat. And then that's important because if folks become consolidated around the belief in the conspiracy theories, whether they're anti-elite conspiracy theories or very often anti-Jewish conspiracy theories or anti-immigrant conspiracy theories about the Mexican superhighway that will, you know, have crazed drug-ravaged Mexican truck drivers running over praying nuns somewhere in you know, Kansas. These conspiracy theories have no resolution other than some kind of rebellion, and it's rebellion that can lead to violence because there is no way the society can address a grievance that's predicated upon the notion that the government is run by an evil conspiracy out to destroy a freedom. How do you compromise with that? And so when you have the Glenn Becks and the Bill O'Reillys portraying the Obama administration as beholden to a secret elite and part of an age-old conspiracy, especially in the case of Glenn Beck, it creates a dynamic where people will turn to first retreating into enclaves with guns. And inevitably, that sets up a dynamic where even inadvertently it can lead to violence.
We're speaking with Chip Berlay, senior analyst at Political Research Associates, co-author of Right-Wing Populism in America, and frequent writer on these subjects. Chip, let's follow up on the issue you just raised. In the past, these kinds of right-wing movements, even in the fairly recent past, say the 1990s, mostly got cheered on by their own ultra far right-wing media, and now they've got major figures like Glenn Beck championing their cause. They've also, very importantly, got people in Washington championing their cause, people like Representative Michelle Bachmann and others, and Republican Party officials pandering in their direction, and so on. And meanwhile, we have a Democratic Party that seems to be in blissful denial that there's even populist anger out there toward the banks and toward the callousness of the federal government in the face of unemployment and growing misery. This seems like a very different kind of setting in different context to watch the rise or the explosion of right-wing populist movements than it has been in the past. Can you talk about the unique dangers of this moment?
Yes. I've interviewed people like Reverend Ostendorf, who did organizing in the 80s during the collapse of the Farm Belt, and then others like Eric Ward, both of whom, these folks work for the Center for New Community out of Chicago. And what they're saying is that there's been a succession of penetrating into the mainstream. They call it a phrase, I think, you know, publicized by Leonard Zeskind in his study on white nationalism, moving from the margins to the mainstream. And what we have now is not just the movement organizations of the right promoting these ideas. But what we saw during the Clinton administration was that some of these right-wing movement ideas began to percolate up into mainstream media. Now we have the mainstream media being the megaphones for these ideas. So that's a shift. We had people like Helen Chenoweth from Idaho in the 1990s who was elected to office, but she was fairly marginalized. Now we have people like Michelle Bachmann who are being put forward as exemplars of where the Republican Party needs to head. And here in Massachusetts, we, of course, elected Scott Brown, a rather amorphous and nebulous economic libertarian and populist, to take the seat from the late Teddy Kennedy, which is an astonishing turn of events. And in fact, Brown, a relatively conservative libertarian populist, was supported by a number of labor union individuals. You had the kind of astonishing look of a bunch of people wearing SEIU union T-shirts holding up Scott Brown for, you know,
it
election signs.
It was the pickup truck.
Well, it could have been the pickup truck, but it was also the rhetoric. And the rhetoric touches the nerves of a lot of people who know that they're being screwed over and that the government needs to, you know, fix the economy and stop bailing out a bunch of wealthy financial folks who feel they need their second yacht and it's only fair because they made so much money for the company. And that kind of populism, this anger at inappropriate division of the economic resources of the country, is completely legitimate. And it's
potentially
a
even healthy.
It's healthy. You need it. You need this kind of anger. It's like teenagers being rebellious. If they're not rebellious, they're going to live with you until they're 40. You need, in a democracy, people to be rebellious. You need them to confront bad leadership. But the Democratic Party, until recently, has been clinging to this idea that this is just a handful of crazy people.
Chip, the election of Obama, a black president, combined with immigration and demographic changes, many analysts have said, has led to a racialization of this right-wing movement, not necessarily the extreme right, but just the sort of the Tea Party and other folks in this populist movement. And yet the probably those most seriously harmed by this economic disaster we've been living through are African Americans.
Right, and immigrants. And so what you have here is there's this idea of relative deprivation, of status anxiety, and the modern version of this is to say, look, when a group of people in the middle class have the perception that they're sinking economically and are about to sink a lot lower, this mobilizes them into activity. And they develop a kind of, they shake their fist up at the, you know, the lazy and corrupt, you know, bad politicians up above. But they often can't reach those people. And so what they do is they stomp on the people below them on the socioeconomic ladder, which historically have been, you know, native people, African Americans, and immigrants of color. More recently, we've added in people who support abortion rights and gay marriage and other gay rights. So what we have then is a very mobilized group of people angry up at a caricature of political leadership based largely on conspiracy theories, who are, you know, poised to stomp on the people they can stomp on, which, again, is the round up the usual suspects of today, primarily black people, immigrants of color, and Muslims.
Chip, we only have another minute, but I hope a quick question. We've talked about populism, and we've talked about right-wing populism, bad, left-wing populism, good. Where does demagoguery fit into this spectrum?
Well, you can have demagogues on the left and right. That's not the issue. The issue is how many people they reach, and also the rhetoric that gets chosen, because, you know, we have some very good union-backed, labor-oriented, community-oriented groups now have launched a campaign against the banksters. You know, aha, funny, bankers and gangsters. But it's what, you know, Father Coughlin used to call the Jewish bankers. And so you have demagoguery, but you also have, you know, basically ignorance of the rhetoric that leads people into targeting scapegoats, and both are occurring now.
Well, Chip Berlay, thank you so much for joining us today. Chip Berlay, Senior Analysis at Political Research Associates. You can see his writing there and at Huffington Post and other outlets. Thanks for joining us today.
Delighted. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm sure we will be having you back, because this is not a blip on the political horizon, we fear.
You can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African American. If you start to, you know, delve around the edges of, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year or whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African American.
Yeah, I was driving in today and I was seeing, because I saw this the piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck. It's What's for Demagogue.
This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on RadioNetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a Listen Live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio. A nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on RadioNetwork.com.
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying, for Men in Hip Hop. Really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about. It shouldn't be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario
in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Hey everybody, it's Dr. Vibe, the host and producer of the Dr. Vibe Show at thedrvibeshow.com. At our show, we do conversations and provide information for black men and those who love them. So come check us out. Also at iTunes, and also selective episodes are featured at the Good Men Project, one of the most viewed websites in the world for men. So find out about black men and those who love them at the Dr. Vibe Show.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
My name is Nicholas Soames. I'm the Member of Parliament for Mid Sussex, and I am the grandson of Winston Churchill. I've decided to lend my strongest possible support to this campaign because I am appalled by the dishonesty and the disgraceful way in which the British National Party have used Churchill's name, particularly during the European election, where they used his face, his features, his words as promotional literature, trying to pretend that Churchill would have admired and supported the aims of the British National Party. What they have done is not only dishonest and irresponsible, but it's downright misleading to try and pretend that Churchill would have had any sympathy with the British National Party, whatever. He would, I can assure you, have loathed everything that they stand for. Churchill led a national government. He was acutely conscious, as Britain's war leader, of the need to have a national government, to bring all parties together. And yet what the BNP seek to do is to divide all parties, to bring division and upset and lack of coherence to our communities by driving wedges between people. That is the exact opposite of everything that Churchill wanted to do in the national government. This is a peaceful country, and what they bring for it is uncertainty, fear, and confusion. There is absolutely nothing that is British about the BNP.
Nothing British is a campaign against racism and extremism. Add your voice by signing our petition at www.nothingbritish.com.
So I'm in the back of a van with Trevor. Tell me a bit about the campaign you're involved with, Trevor.
I'm involved in the campaign against the British National Party, which has been particularly focused recently locally around the Red, White and Blue Festival, which is an annual BNP event that in the past has been held in Wales and in Lancashire. Last year and again this year, it's taking place in Derbyshire, a little village, barely a village actually, called Denby. So we're kind of building up a campaign against that, basically, to try and stop it taking place.
Okay, because, so this is the yearly festival of the British National Party?
Yeah.
Why do we need to oppose the British National Party?
And the British National Party is, it's clearly a party that in many ways has very nasty policies on immigration, law and order, all this, and vicious right wing. But actually it's more than that. This isn't just UKIP or the nasty end of the Tories. We're talking about a party here where the hardcore at the centre, the people like Nick Griffin and Mark Collett, are people whose pedigree is in fascist groups, violent, extreme violence, control of the streets, racism, vicious racism, anti-Semitism, Hitler glorification, all the rest of it, you know. These people, I mean, take for instance Nick Griffin, whose background was he was a member of the National Front, the official National Front, the International Third Position, bizarre little sect, and then before he became involved in the British National Party, he's now the leader.
Right. Opposing this festival, what is practically being planned?
Right. Obviously, it's a big... I mean, this is a big thing in the sense that it's a major national event for the party. They've claimed to have thousands of people in the past. So what we've done is... there's various avenues we've been pursuing. One is that this event, in order for them to be able to sell alcohol and play music, they've been seeking to get a premises licence, which allows them to do these things. I mean, they won't stop the event if they don't get that, but it would make the event much easier to do. So one of the things we've done is we've gone through, partially through the official channels at the moment, so we've gone off and we've written the letters, but most of those letters have been rejected because we don't live in the relevant area. Licensing law is very, very restrictive on what you're allowed to use for different reasons. It has you can't really use political arguments. There will also... at the moment, we haven't heard this confirmed. There's a provisional date on the Amber Valley Borough Council website that the licensing panel will take place on June the 10th in Ripley at the, I think it's a town hall. And there will be a protest outside that to try and anger. And then the longer term campaign after that is to, we've talked about trying, if we find out that any company is supplying the Red, White and Blue Festival, we intend to publicise that widely and campaign against them. And then in the event we're unable to stop it beforehand, we intend to mobilise on August the 16th from 9 o'clock at the area where this festival is taking place and basically make it as difficult as possible for anyone to get there and stop it taking place.
So you're actually talking about physically blocking the festival from happening?
Insofar as it is August the 16th. The festival itself runs from August the 15th to the 17th. But a lot of people, because it's a quote-unquote family festival, don't like camping in a field and have work. So what we're hoping to do is cause maximum disruption, at the very least, on the Saturday from 9 o'clock, so in order that people turning up for that day and for the festival, try and stop them getting there or make it as difficult as possible.
But this does sound like one of the kind of bigger scale anti-fascist mobilisations in the UK for a very, very long time.
I mean, there have been large marches against, larger marches than this will probably be against the BNP. What there hasn't been, certainly as far as I'm aware, in terms of a direct process against the BNP, with the direct intention of stopping them doing something, I'm not aware there being anything on the kind of scale that we're going to need in a very long time, possibly decades.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's also very scary, but it potentially could be very important what we would like to see. I mean, the truth is that the anti-fascist movement in this country is quite weak. I don't think, you know, there are Unite Against Fascism, which various people have concerns about, Searchlight, which isn't really much of an organisation. It's basically a magazine with a few people associated with it, and Antifar, which has done some good stuff, but is still relatively small. We would like to, would hope, maybe, that what this is going to do is hopefully reinvigorate the anti-fascist movement in this country, because the BNP are getting themselves organised. They now have 55 councillors, and they're, you know, working on... They now have one representative in the GLA, and may very well have, after the next European elections, at least one MEP. So they're getting organised, and we really need to...
It's time to take action, really.
If we don't do it now, it may be too late.
Okay. If people want to get actively involved in this campaign, they want to find out more, where do they go to?
Well, they're probably one of the best things to do. We set up a website where we're... if you go to that, it's nobnpfestival.wordpress.com. That'll have all the information on it. There's an about page on there which will have... There's an email address. So it'll allow you to basically keep an eye on what we're up to. You can get... And put yourself on the email list and send out any announcements. And there's also other information there, like it links to a page. There's a Flickr account, which for those people who aren't able to go and check it out themselves can see what the area around the festival is going to be like, to give them an idea of what the kind of they'll need to be thinking about if they're planning on coming on the 16th of August.
And above all, pencil in 15th, 16th, 17th of August to keep free.
Certainly the 16th, and if people can do stuff on the other days as well, that we're not going to say no. But the 16th is the big mobilisation. The festival itself runs from the 15th to the 17th. It's at the Bungalow, Codnadembi Lane, DE58PT. You can Google it on Google Maps, find out where it is. You can get a nice close-up view of the close-up view from the satellite image, so people can find out where this is. And hopefully join us on the 16th and who knows where else. So.
Excellent. Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
It's our news act.
Come along. Forget their heroin, smoke some grass and relax and forget your bloody wine. Come along, oh Americans, and let's be number two. Number one was a pissy-ass act we all went through. Come along, save the whales and save the humans too, and the ladies and the fairies and the communists, true blue. Come along out of the Cold War, the planet is still here. We got to save our mama, nothing more we have to fear. Come along and let the people and the other species rare breathe.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org for Wednesday, February 24th, 2016. Israeli troops to demolish killed Palestinian homes in the West Bank and Navy attack fishers in Gaza. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned.
Israeli soldiers invaded early on Wednesday at dawn several Palestinian districts in occupied West Bank, stormed and violently searched homes, and kidnapped 17 Palestinians, the Palestinian Prisoner Society, PPS, said. The PPS stated that the soldiers invaded Hebron City and several nearby communities in the southern part of the West Bank and kidnapped 8 Palestinians. The soldiers also kidnapped 6 Palestinians during various invasions and searches of homes in the Ramallah and Al Bira district. Another Palestinian was kidnapped in the Kalandia refugee camp north of Jerusalem, while a teenager was kidnapped from his home in Abu Dis town. One man was also kidnapped after soldiers searched homes in Nablus city, northern West Bank. In other news, Israeli forces on Wednesday handed the families of 3 Palestinian teenagers who were recently killed